Namaste and welcome to Vedanta, the River of Wisdom podcast, a podcast that brings to you the ancient flowing tradition of Vedanta, which reveals that you are pure being having a human experience. I'm your guide by the side, Swamini B. Let us flow, you and I, on the banks of the River of Wisdom. There's a slight drizzle outside the window, and I hope it's not too distracting. Harsh from Nepal had a bunch of questions about vasanas. What are vasanas? How are they defined? How does one know what one's vasanas are? And how does one acquire them? Definitely a topic worth an entire episode. There is no English translation for the word vasana. It means some sort of a strong tendency in a person formed by repetitive actions, which influences the present behavior of a person. These vasanas could be from this lifetime or previous lifetimes. We see evidence of this in our lives and that of others. The talent for music or any discipline in early childhood, the love of a language, a longing for something that you don't have an explanation for. Many of our strong inclinations in early childhood indicate us having dabbled in that area or having a strong raga towards it. It is interesting that the term vasana does not appear in the major Upanishads nor the Bhagavad Gita. When the word vasana is used in Hindi or other regional languages in India, it is often referring to lust or a binding desire. The only Upanishad that I found the word vasana abundantly used is Muktikopanishad, which has about 76 verses and is a dialogue between Bhagwan Sri Rama and Hanuman. When asked by Hanuman, what is Jivan Mukti, meaning liberation while living, and how to gain it, Sri Rama explains that it is learning the 108 Upanishads, by which Kartritvam, the sense of doership, and the resulting guilt and sorrow is removed. Mukti has to be gained through Sarva Vasana Kshaya, which means an exhaustion of all vasanas. The Upanishad explains vasana as Dridha Bhavanaya Tyakta Purva Apara Vicharanam, meaning a clinging to objects with an intense longing without previous or later deliberation. Vasana is used in the sense of avidya, ignorance, and in some places, ragas, strong binding desires. Sometimes the word samskara is also used, but since it has other meanings, we want to keep it aside for now. The Upanishad explains that whatever is dwelled on intensely, one becomes that. This is also reflected in the beautiful Bhagavad Gita verses. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangasteshu pajayate. In the person who dwells upon objects, an attachment is born with reference to them. The Gita then goes on to say that from attachment is born anger, and from anger comes confused thinking, which leads to actions that are not conducive to oneself or the other. These verses are not meant for us to reject desire or anger, but to be aware of them, because all emotions are a part of the glory of Bhagavan, and there is no need to reject any of them. They have a purpose to serve. We develop enough self-mastery such that we are no longer slaves to them. Swami Chinmayananji explains vasanas, and I quote, "Vasana means fragrance, the fragrance of what we have done and thought of. Whatever we do, karma, and whatever we think of, they all leave impressions on us. They pressurize to repeat ourselves. For 5 years, you drink a cup of coffee at 3 in the evening. After that, you don't need a watch. Whatever you may be doing at that time, you will crave for that cup of coffee. It is a pressure from the past. Unless these past pressures are eliminated, we cannot rethink and review the world around us. The vasana creates a lens through which we see the world, and hence through viveka, we are able to create some space between me and the desire. This is a vasana of drinking coffee. It's not exactly an addiction, but a very strong karmic imprint because of repetitive actions, or rather the habit of drinking coffee, which creates this inner pressure in the person. It takes away the freedom to think independently of one's patterns. Having a vasana of something leads to being conditioned by it. Dwelling on coffee does not transform us into a cup of coffee, but makes us so identified with it that drinking coffee becomes a part of the identity which limits and conditions us. One cannot do without it. The Upanishad explains that vasanas are of two kinds, Shuddha and Malinaha, pure and impure. The impure vasanas are of the nature of intense ajnana, meaning ignorance, associated with the ahankara and hence lead to rebirth. Ignorance of one's true nature leads us to identification and boxing ourselves into our little identities. The pure vasanas are the destroyers of ajnana, which is really any learning. Any learning involves repetition, be it playing a chord on the guitar, chanting of the Vedas, courteous behavior, performing our sacred duties towards the environment, learning a language, repeated shravanam, and so on. Any learning involves the use of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, which includes our sensory organs, organs of action, along with our minds and prana. So the learning creates karmic imprints, but because the learning are pure vasanas, they are conducive to our pursuits, they don't really create a problem. The secular presentation of vasanas is really a cultivation of habits which shape the way we live every day and hence our lifestyles. Vasanas in our lives predispose one to particular patterns of behavior. To explain the intensity of a vasana, we give a few examples. Example 1. You take a cold piece of jelly on a plate and you trickle very hot water onto the top. The water will run off the plate and leave behind a faint channel where the hot water melted the jelly. If you now pour more hot water, it will tend to run into the same channels as before. The new lines that are formed offer the line of least resistance and deepen the channels. If this is done repeatedly, very deep channels will form and it will become difficult to get the water to run anywhere else. Thus, an entrenched habit of vasana has been formed. Example 2. Making patterns on the sand on the seashore. The patterns last only until the waves wash them away. Example 3. Try moving your fingers in a filled up bucket of water. As your fingers move through the water, there is no pattern that gets formed. Our ragas and dveshas are a form of vasana. The sense of kartritvam, doership, and bhoktritvam, experiencership, come from the fundamental vasana, which is excessive identification with the body-mind. This fades away with the exposure to Vedanta. As one leads a life of karma yoga, the intensity of our binding desires wear out such that the deep karmic imprints due to these very identifications fade away. Events no more leave karmic imprints and we float through the rest of our lives with a sense of fullness. To know what one's vasanas are, look at your behavior patterns. How do you relate to the objects of desire? What happens when you don't have your object of desire? What happens to you when you finally get it? Whether the object of desire is a person or a desirable situation, there is obsessive thinking around how to get it, how one's life will be when one has the object of desire, and so on. All these vasanas stem from avidya and rule our lives. We obsess over them so much without inquiring into the root of all binding desires and flit from one desire to another to another. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Birth and death again and again, lifetime after lifetime. Desire is a form of ichha shakti, and there is nothing wrong about it. What happens to you when you have the desire is the key. Does the desire blind us that we throw all caution to the winds of adharma and allow ourselves to be consumed by it? Some of our desires are so strong that we can see the limitation of the desire only by fulfilling the desire. A 30-year-old student was very keen on getting married and would tell me often, "I understand what you say about projection of happiness onto desires. I can see this in everything except my intense desire to get married. Once I am married, I will feel fulfilled." Sure enough, a few months later, she tells me, "I have a great marriage, but it was not all that I had made it out to be. Still, the restlessness has gone." Some of our desires may be strong, but with the help of our viveka, we see the need to not fulfill the desire. Another 30-year-old married woman is very attracted to her office colleague. She revels in the excitement of the forbidden fantasy. Despite her attraction, she is able to see the repercussions of the affair on herself, her colleague, and also her own betrayal of her loving husband. Sure, she comes up with arguments for and against having the affair. Eventually, she sees the colleague's limitations, focuses on enjoying a good working friendship, and looks at deepening the connection with her husband. It's important to be objective when it comes to our binding desires. We need to fulfill some of our desires for the sake of our emotional growth and fulfillment. Better still, we try and align all our desires with the deeper underlying priorities, and we definitely align our desires with dharma so that we are able to fulfill them. It is this honesty which contributes to our maturity. The desire to provide for your family, the desire to help someone. Adi Shankaracharya had the desire to bless everyone with the knowledge of Vedanta. There's nothing wrong with any of these desires. The desire to create, the desire to discover the vaccine for the coronavirus, the desire to find an innovation that will improve the quality of lives of people. There's nothing wrong with all these desires. So there are some desires which we can be objective to, and its pressure and sting fade away. Given our vasana to be self-judgmental, I'm guessing that a lot of minds are racing, wondering, what are my vasanas? Much like modern psychology, one could keep on coming up with the what and how of one's binding desires and get caught in the spiral of more judgment of oneself and sometimes even intense self-dislike. So, what will help us break the vortex of vasana are the following. 1. Be aware and not judgmental of your patterns. 2. See that your behavioral patterns have come from repetition and choices that were made. Hence, see how you sustain your behavioral habits, both positive and negative. 3. Build habits that work for you. It's not easy to form habits, and so we try again and again and again. And finally, our good habits serve us. 4. Systematic exposure to Vedanta alone can cut the roots of the fundamental vasana, that is avidya. So go straight for the root cause. Until then, the disposition of Karma Yoga is to be adopted, mainly Kaushalam and Samatvam. Kaushalam is the aligning of your desire-based actions to your priorities, and definitely dharma. And samatvam is the gracious acceptance of the results of your and others' actions. So then kaushalam is an offering to Bhagavan of your desire-based actions. And samatvam is an acceptance of the order of Bhagavan, which gives you the different kinds of results. 5. We practice witnessing and see the play of these vasanas in our lives. In witnessing meditation, when we sit for a long time, there might be pain or discomfort in the joints. Our inherent vasana is to avoid pain and seek pleasure. We witness even this. We don't shift our position and we stay with the discomfort. It's not easy. We do it. And then we find that the discomfort does not overtake us. Finally, you are greater and bigger than any vasana. You as Chaitanyam consciousness illumine all patterns. Vasudevam sarvamiti. All that is here is the one in whom everything dwells, including the vasanas. You matter. Your life matters. What you do with your life matters. Thanks for listening. If you found this episode offering some insight, I do hope you will consider sharing this with friends, family, or on social media. In response to some of your requests, I now have transcripts of the recent podcast episodes. discoveratma.com/category/podcast. As always, if you have any question, you can get in touch. The email ID is swaminiji@discoveratma.com. Thanks for listening and see you next week.